Resilient Cyber Podcast brings you conversations from diverse cybersecurity professionals, ranging from executives, subject matter experts, and aspiring entrants. Today's diverse threat landscape requires systems that can withstand a variety of cyber incidents, remaining trustworthy and secure.
Resilient Cyber is sponsored by Acquia, a digital services, service-disabled, veteran-owned small business that is passionate about enabling innovation and driving secure digital transformation. Acquia believes in guardrails over roadblocks and security as a business enabler. Learn more at acquia.us. That's A-Q-U-I-A.us. We want to take a moment to give a shout-out to our Season 6 sponsor, Push Security. If you're in a cloud-first business, you already know identities are the new security perimeter. Identity-based attacks are now the most common form of cyber attack, making up around half of all data breaches. Push Security gives your security team visibility of your whole internet-facing identity attack surface and automatically hardens it against identity-based attacks. So if identity security is a priority for you in 2024, check out Push Security at pushsecurity.com. I want to take a moment to give another shout-out to one of our Season 6 sponsors, Checkmarks. Checkmarks is a global leader in application security with a consolidated platform appreciated by enterprises across the globe. In fact, 60% of Fortune 100 companies use Checkmarks to boost their security from code to cloud and trim down total cost of ownership. That means securing billions of lines of code every year, enabling almost 20,000 scans an hour, and helping to plug over 2 million vulnerabilities. If you don't already, try to read their groundbreaking research and monthly trends reports. They've helped change my understanding of application security and software supply chain security, and I suspect they will for you too. Thank you for joining the Resilient Cyber Show. My name is Chris Hughes, and today I'm joined by Dave Cantrell and Matt Nelson from Bespin, a DoD software factory within the Air Force. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen.
Yeah, awesome to be here. Thanks a lot.
Definitely. We've been chatting a good bit, you know, so I know a bit about your backgrounds, obviously, especially Matt. You and I have known each other for quite a while, but for folks that don't know you all and haven't followed your careers or, you know, your presence in the community at all, you know, can you start with a little bit of background, perhaps, Dave, on your end?
Yeah, sure. So I was a software engineer in the Air Force for many, many years, eventually retired. During that time, of course, dealt a lot with security and had run-ins with security, trying to find a path to yes, things like that. And when I was transitioning out of the Air Force, I decided to transition into security more full-time, starting out as a cybersecurity engineer, working on a mobile application as a contractor. And then from there was brought in as part of the original Bespin standup to actually build out the security program as a whole and build out the continuous ATO. So following on that, I worked with our authorizing official to negotiate out the continuous ATO process that we had developed, and then badge flipped from there over into the federal government civil service role, where I continue to do that as the CISO for Bespin now.
Very cool. And I'm just laughing a little bit on the video here because, you know, we refer to security almost like the police. You had run-ins with security. Yes. That's how people think of like dealing with security and compliance. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, we got to deal with security, you know, and we're trying to get to a better way of doing that where they don't feel so dreadful about interacting with us. Right. But Matt, over to you. How about you for some background?
Yeah. So I joined Bespin as their CTO back in September. So I haven't had a ton of like, you know, time in the seat, but before that, I was in private industry for 3 years as the COO of Rise 8. And so, Chris, our paths crossed there. And it's awesome to kind of just see you. I'm a huge fan of like what you're doing and how you're promoting cybersecurity across the community. And then, you know, prior to that, I was 15 years active duty as a, you know, an acquisition officer with inside the Air Force. So did a lot of like technical product management, you know, helped Kessel Run get off the ground back in the 2016, 2017 timeframe. So been, you know, inside of this DevOps space for, you know, the last 8 years or so. Really excited to see where we're going inside of just, you know, software factories and, you know, in this case, with inside Bespin of like, hey, it's time to take mobile seriously. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to jump ship was because I really see the like there's such a massive return on investment if we can get mobile right for great power competition, agile combat employment, and all of those pieces. Cause, you know, I would argue that I'd say maybe less than 20% of the DoD force even has the ability to do table stakes like of things on a mobile device, like check your email, check your calendar, do anything like that. So now's the time to really like redefine what it means for the smartphone to be a critical weapon of war versus just, you know, a dumb terminal on the back end type of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you all. I think you're in a really exciting space. And we've heard a lot about obviously cloud, but now edge computing and forward deployed forces with mobile devices. We've seen a little bit at that play with a bit of that at play with, you know, conflicts like Ukraine and Russia, for example. Mobile phones have been no stranger to the conversation there in terms of being part of the battlefield. But for folks that aren't from our ecosystem, don't operate in the Department of Defense, if you had to, you know, kind of just give a summary of like what exactly is a software factory before we dive into the nuances of BestFit and what you all are up to, people are probably don't even know, some of them don't even know what a software factory means. What do we mean when we say that term?
And I think everybody has their own definition. I don't think anybody's really landed on like, hey, this is the single definition. But in my opinion, it's, you know, you have the ability to build and continuously deliver your software into production. So it has to be that entire customer journey of, you know, taking in what the requirements are on the front end, building software that, you know, meets an authority to operate in a modern way using modern pipelines and tooling and bringing security to the left and pushing all of that inside of that, you know, risk management framework process. And then being able to deliver that capability into the hands of the warfighter so you can get that feedback. That's a software factory. I know like there's been a lot of terms thrown out there like, hey, there's Air Force now has like 26 software factories. But if you don't meet that definition, in my mind, you're either a software factory or application development team. And really like, how can we like further mature what a software factory does and really define that for the community? So there's not a lot of like confusion in that loaded term. I think you can say that like a lot of, you know, inside of the DoD now software factory becomes either, you know, a double-edged sword. People either love it or like, you know, this is just another innovation, good idea type of thing. So,
Yeah, I think that's good. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say that a key part of that too is compressing that authorization cycle for software. So for any folks who aren't familiar with the federal DoD process, there's an extremely cumbersome process based around the NIST risk management framework, like Matt mentioned, that places the approval to deploy software in the hands of a few very senior personnel. And they are designated with the authority to actually approve and accept risk. And so that becomes a major part of the bottleneck, that plus the acquisitions process, which was very, very waterfall, old school. The DoD has come a long way on changing the acquisitions process, in large part thanks to the efforts of Kessel Run and other software factories. And the authorization process is the other piece. So we establish mechanisms to allow software to quickly get to production through a much more agile software approval and authorization process.
Yeah, I think you guys are, I like where you're going with that. There's no definitive definition per se. There's reference architectures and so on. But, you know, essentially, you know, we've heard a lot about agile software development, iterative, you know, software delivery to production and so on. And a software factory is kind of that facilitator of allowing people, process, technology to be used to do that at, you know, at scale across the department, for example. So BestFin, what exactly is BestFin? You know, for folks that don't know much about BestFin in the software factory ecosystem, whichever of you or both of you want to tackle that, tell us a little bit about BestFin and what, you know, makes you different than some of the other software factories and your focus of your mission and so on.
Matt, you want to take this?
Yeah, sure. I can take it. So, you know, with the whole groundswell, the software factory is really, you know, coming to like peak fever back in like 2018, 2019 timeframe. BestFin got stood up to be the mobile software factory, the mobile center of excellence. And what we did then is, you know, hey, we quickly realized that to be able to get mobile capabilities out of the warfighter, first, you got to establish a continuous authority to operate pipeline, you know, powered by really great, like, you know, continuous scanning, you know, continuous development tooling. And that's what we did back in 2019 to get that, you know, process stood up. And, you know, right now we are the only software factory that has a continuous authority to operate for mobile applications. And what makes that unique is, you know, we have enterprise certificates, both at the Apple level and at the Android level, for us to be able to own that chain of custody of pushing software into those, you know, production environments without having to go to a third-party reviewer, either through the Google Play Store or through, you know, the Apple Store. And that's, you know, we're the only one inside the DoD that has that for iOS. They're a little bit more like Iron Garden when it comes to like who gets those certificates. So that's really, really cool. But we also learned that, you know, our customers want to be able to execute their workloads, not just on a mobile device, but also in the cloud. So we have a continuous authority to operate to deliver applications, web applications, or, you know, into cloud one production environments at IL4 and IL5. So, you know, one thing with the being the mobile center of excellence is, you know, during that time frame, fever pitch and a lot of conversations around like platforms and, you know, who's going to be doing what as we like grow and mature the software factory pieces, mobile kind of got lost in the noise there a little bit. And there's not been like a massive groundswell of demand for, hey, I want to be able to build mobile applications because I see the value that they can provide. But, you know, I think we're at this pivot point just inside of how operations are going to be managed, you know, the tactics, techniques, and procedures that you're seeing coming out of, you know, the peer-to-peer fight in Russia and Ukraine that like leverages mobile a ton. We're starting to really double down inside Bestman on what it means to be the mobile center of excellence and really push that thread for being able to support, you know, not just, you know, people that need to, you know, get, you know, email and calendar access on, you know, on basically like a Nipper VM on your mobile device, but also be able to push like mobile native applications that can support the fight. So that's what I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I think that mobile aspect is obviously the key differentiating factor that you kind of emphasized there. And, you know, we talked a lot about the military aspect and the cyber warfare aspect of mobile, but there's also something to be said about the workforce, right? The mainly people that are coming into the workforce within the DoD right now are used to using these kind of technologies, these kind of form factors of mobile technology for doing a lot of different things. And we heard a lot about fix our computers and the frustration there. I can imagine that there's a lot of frustration of, hey, I just want to be able to use my mobile device to, you know, coordinate my move from one duty station to the next or do a lot of things like that we just take for granted in the commercial space. And you talked about cloud, right? We've spent a lot of time now navigating in the Department of Defense, like cloud. We've had the, you know, obviously FedRAMP, FedRAMP Plus, DoD SRG and the impact levels. And we kind of matured our way through cloud, but mobile is a little bit different, a little bit more new in that context. You know, what is the state of mobile security when we look at the Department of Defense right now?
Yeah, Matt has a really great statement he makes. It's like back in the day, cloud was a new thing, right? Nobody really wanted to touch it because nobody understood it. And so we're in that space now with mobile, right? We're kind of in that mode where we were 10, 12 years ago, where a lot of the cyber teams and PMOs, they simply don't understand the concept of mobile technology. A fundamental limitation is they view it as kind of just another, you know, client GUI front end. And so they end up building, frankly, sometimes not optimal interfaces and user experiences. And so, you know, Bestman tries to move the needle, not just on the technology and the security, but also on the user experience part. And we have this concept of impact levels in the cloud, but we don't really have a corresponding concept on devices. And so we're looking to work on building out this concept of what are various impact levels that you can define on the device where you can establish a minimum level of security, because that's all an impact level is, right? It is a statement about the minimum level of security that a particular cloud environment is capable of supporting. And so when you understand that definition and that concept is pretty easy to move, at least conceptually, over to devices. And right now, and I think Matt agrees with this, is right now it's, you know, we refer to it as like the Wild West. And you have this situation where you have a plethora of devices out there without any real way to bin and group them together into meaningful categories so that you can better establish policy around how to manage those devices. Right now, the DoD just says, well, it must be a NIAP approved device. Okay, great. But what type of information, what level of information can be processed by that device? Well, they say up to CUI, but then there's a completely different scheme for approving and accrediting the mobile app to go on that device, right? It's a different set of standards. So it creates this kind of fractured ecosystem that we try to put our hands around, and we try to look at it from the standpoint of how can we adjust policy, right? At the DoD and Air Force level, how can we influence those policy decisions? But also, how can we better establish frameworks and models for defining acceptable levels of security on devices and establishing those delivery pathways? And the real challenge with that is that there's a wide variety of missions out there. And what is considered acceptable security for someone who needs to check their email is not necessarily considered acceptable security for someone who is using their mobile device to coordinate drones and strikes, right? And in addition, even that user who is checking their email, one user may be checking their email to, you know, just do routine day-to-day stuff. Another one may be checking their email to receive updated operational coordination plans for a combat op, right? So those are still in and of themselves two very different levels of capability. And a lot of times people kind of pigeonhole it into, oh, it's just email. But as we know, you know, the war runs on Microsoft Office, right, is the joke. So that simple tool is carrying a lot of power behind it. So we have to look at those pieces as well. There's a lot of complexity there.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of nuance between now and the use case of the device and, you know, the use case for what they're doing with it, but the data that's being used and under what context. And it's a lot of, you know, complexity and nuance to kind of navigate. And from a policy perspective, you don't want to be too prescriptive to where it's too rigid and can't be navigated by people in the field that are using these for various purposes. But at the same time, if you have a lack of governance and a lack of structure, it can be used in ways that has a lot of risk associated with it, which can be a challenge as well. Anything to add on your end, Matt, in terms of the state of mobile security?
No, I think it's an exciting time for mobile security. We have the opportunity to have like second mover advantage, right? Like, I'm sure if you ping like cybersecurity experts like yourself of like, hey, how can we do it better this go around when we talk about impact levels? Are they too restrictive? What could be more of an optionality kind of approach to ensuring that like you meet the intent of delivering secure software that, you know, your end users trust, but not have to do it in such a constrained way that like, you're putting, you know, all your kind of just mission profiles into like three different pegs. So that's kind of like how I'm trying to kind of navigate this and really understand of like what would be the best way to do it. Because at the end of the day, when you're talking about mobile DevOps, like the ops piece there is the devices, right? You don't get to inherit, you know, cloud cybersecurity controls inside of your tech stack, you know. Your biggest piece of your tech stack is the mobile device itself. And like, you're inheriting a lot of the controls that are coming from like the iOS operating system, or maybe like the mobile device manager that you're deploying out to, or how can you, you know, have a hybrid deployment model where you can push capabilities out to, you know, a commercial app store, but then have, you know, a more lockdown secured approach for applications, very similar application that needs to go in an MDM. And like the tactical assault kit and the team around that, like, has really like done a great job of kind of, you know, forging the path of what that looks like when it comes to, you know, they have the team awareness kit that is very similar to the tactical assault kit when it comes to like one is commercial and one's for like mission or mobile device manager. So like, taking a lot of those lessons learned, navigating that so you can have a flexible cybersecurity policy, really trying to define what mobile DevOps is inside of this space, and bringing it up to a level of awareness that like, hey, we need to have these conversations now, because, you know, inherently with a mobile device, you get an automated PACE plan if you think about it, right? Like PACE is your primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency type of, you know, comm plan when you leave like outside of an office building or outside of a military base. And, you know, with a mobile device, your primary could be 5G, your backup could be peer-to-peer Wi-Fi, then contingency could be, you know, a Bluetooth mesh, and then being able to connect to Starlink and all of those pieces that you get just straight out of the box. And if you build mobile native applications around that, you can really take advantage of those cool things to support, you know, the mission. So, you know, from a mobile policy perspective, it's a lot to kind of get the house in order So it's no longer the Wild West, but you know, excited to have like, you know, smart people like Dave to kind of noodle on that with me.
I'll say, real quick, I'll just say too, there's an inherent tension, and this is something Matt and I talk about a lot, that there's an inherent tension between flexibility and speed of security and approval, because the warfighters always need maximum flexibility. But when you have maximum flexibility, security accreditation processes are very, very slow, because everyone can have their own kind of unique variant of a capability. So the more you standardize capabilities and processes, the faster your engineering processes can be, the faster your accreditation processes can be, the faster your delivery processes can be. But by necessity, you are reducing the choice set. Right. And you're funneling people into a particular opinionated direction. So the tension point is finding the right balance between the flexibility and the guardrails that are needed. And what we struggle with sometimes is what is the right set of guardrails to attach that can improve that speed and reduce friction without unduly restricting mission flexibility. And that is not a trivial problem to solve.
Yeah, as you point out, there's a lot of nuance. You both have emphasized this, you, due to the ubiquitous and diverse various options when it comes to network activity and use cases and data under what context and so on. But I'm curious, you know, if you've been in this space for quite a while, like a lot of us have in the last several years, we've heard a lot about edge computing and things like that. You know, why do you think there's a delay in kind of a centralized, you know, coherent approach to mobile in the department, you know, given that we have heard a lot about edge computing and the role that edge will play in mobile devices and so on? It seems like there's still kind of a gap from a centralized, you know, a centralized kind of governing body or consensus among the community, for example, of how to approach this problem.
Yeah, and my opinion is like we've just kind of neglected mobile as like a critical capability that, you know, can really enhance our warfighting functionality. And I think we have neglected it because of the fears around it, right? Like this is not only a supercomputer in your pocket, but it also has a bunch of different sensors, right? It has the ability to video and audio capture and like all of that. And not, I mean, your laptop has that capability today, but there's no one that's like really, you know, kind of fearful around, you know, that the laptop capability compared to the mobile device when it comes to just like the fears around like audio capture, video capture, like location tracking on your device or anything like that. And you hear all these horror stories around like, well, this people were wearing smartwatches and they like identified a secret base in Africa because, you know, we had poor mobile security and all of those pieces. And so like we just treated that as like, hey, that's too scary. I don't want to even like, you know, kind of tackle that at the enterprise level. Let's, you know, maintain security through what we can control. And what we can control right now is, you know, these STIG devices or these, you know, standard desktop configuration, you know, laptops, but we're barely trying to like keep our arms around that and then saying like, hey, there's this other whole entire ecosystem that has 6 billion devices out there in the world. What about those? And like, that's hard and scary and I'm not ready to manage it. So until we like make an intentional direction at senior leader level that like this needs to be something that has high focus on, we're going to, you know, just always kind of treat it as a secondary, you know, support function versus like the ability to be like the next generation communication device.
Yeah. And the DoD, the way the DoD structures itself is primarily around the concept of these big iron systems, right? It's in order to manage large bureaucracy, it has to have a defined structure. So that structure largely is around systems with program offices built around them. And each one is going to build up its own mission specific capability. And the responsibility for choosing the stack is delegated down to them as part of the acquisitions process. So you end up with all of these variant technologies and capabilities and processes out there, which actually in some ways is a benefit because it avoids having single points of failure, right? But it creates vast complexity in trying to put your arms around that, you know, that landscape, right? And so it's trying to steer the Titanic with a paddle in a sense, right? When we talk about DoD policy, it tends to be reactive, and it's not their fault, right? There's a lot of overwhelm, exactly as Matt said. It's such a complex landscape. These are edge compute nodes in your pocket, and the paradigm that people and PMOs have operated under is for centralized systems primarily. And these create the potential for distributed and decentralized computing. And so it changes the paradigm. And that paradigm shift is what takes a long time to take hold, because all of your engineering processes and cybersecurity approaches are based on one dominant paradigm. So you have to change that entire mindset to some extent to adopt mobile. And what happens is, instead of doing that, you bolt it on as another front end. And that's not bad in and of itself in the context of that individual system, but at scale, it starts to create the situation where we have a giant plethora of mobile apps that have overlapping functions, bad user experience, bad mission outcomes, et cetera.
Yeah, it seems like it can quickly spiral in the wrong direction. And as you pointed out, you know, DoD, and this is compliance more broadly, is always reactionary in the sense that it's reacting to the way that things are moving within the technology domain, for example. But there has to be some kind of, you know, forward-thinking capacity that we leverage so that we aren't always bolting things on, but we're thinking forward of how we can use these in the future and use compliance, use policy to actually enable things to be innovative and functional and capable and deliver value versus impede it, as you point out. And I wanted to ask, you know, we talk a lot about the gaps that do exist. Are there any kind of standards when it comes to mobile application security right now that you all leverage or you're looking to leverage, things like that?
Yeah, the de facto by policy DoD standard is that applications need to be evaluated against NIAP, right? The devices need to be NIAP validated and applications need to be NIAP validated. And the mistake that we see over and over and over again with program offices is treating mobile applications like web or desktop applications, running vulnerability scans on them and then approving them. But DoD policy is extremely clear, first in 2017, and then with the new policy they just issued a couple of months ago, which came out as a response to the IG report that identified gaps plus some leak issues that occurred. They published this new guidance that reiterated very strongly the original 2017 guidance that NIAP is the standard. And getting program offices to understand the difference between vulnerability scanning, which is what everyone is used to, and NIAP, which is sort of like RMF controls, but it's not vulnerability scanning at all. There is no concept of vulnerability scanning in this DoD policy. And so bridging that gap is difficult. That standard is there. And what we've done at Bespin is we've built out a very easy, rapidly consumable, very quick service line to be able to intake an application and evaluate it against that standard. We can turn it around in a couple of days and get the evaluation memo on our letterhead, signed by me, et cetera, back out the door to the customer so they can hand that over to their MDM owners, their AOs, et cetera, to demonstrate that they're compliant. However, that standard is designed for the NIAP program, was designed for things like routers, switches, et cetera. It wasn't really designed for applications that are updated potentially daily, right, through CI/CD pipelines. So there are tension points there as well. It's not a bad standard, but it is something very different that these offices need to understand. And that's why we stood up a service line like that. Now, we do go a lot further than that, though, with the certification capabilities that we have. We have the full CI/CD pipeline with a whole battery of scans and a very thorough assessment and certification process. But we can do both of those, right? We can provide a very strong seal of approval, or we can provide, here's what meets the bare minimum standard. Right. And we can do either or both of those for customers as they come in, because we're trying to meet programs where they are. We're trying to move the needle by providing the high level certification. But we also want to meet those program offices where they are today, where they have a small team that is building an app. And then under their current paradigm, I have a piece of software. Now I need to find somebody to certify it. And we want to move them away from that, but we do want to meet them where they are.
Yeah, you point out, you know, NIAP, for example, for folks not familiar with it, I'll drop the link in the chat, but it's called the National Information Assurance Partnership. And it deals with common criteria. There's PROC compliant lists. There's protection profiles for different use cases and devices and so on. But as you point out, you know, it's a program that was built in a different time for a different operating model and different, you know, paradigm than what we see currently when we look at cloud computing, edge computing, mobile devices, and so on. So it doesn't necessarily fit perfectly. So I'm sure folks are wondering, and you talked about this a little bit, but you know, what are you guys using in terms of tools and methodologies and practices to actually secure some of the mobile apps, you know, when it comes to CI/CD pipelines or certain tools or, you know, scans and so on? If you can elaborate, I'm sure the folks would love to learn a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'll speak in general about the technical capabilities, but Matt can go into more detail on some of the practice pieces. But we have a CI/CD pipeline capability. It's fully integrated. It's inside an impact level 5 environment. So all the source code and all of the security scans are fully resident inside that military, IL5 NSS rated cloud environment. So customers can come in and get access to our tool chain. They can put their code through this battery of scans. We have overlapping scanners that look for code weaknesses, CWEs that the developers are introducing themselves, where they're writing code and making flaws. We have overlapping scanners that look for vulnerabilities in third-party projects. We have tooling that evaluates containers. We have tooling that evaluates mobile applications. We have tooling that automates a large portion of NIAP evaluation. We have tooling that performs dynamic analysis of mobile applications on a device farm. And we also have an automated pen testing capability for cloud applications as well. So we can run pen tests, you know, for example, nightly. And all of that feeds back into the centralized tool chain. And we can apply pass-fail gates for each tool. So for example, you come in and you onboard to this tool chain, we give you a series of security controls for your application to implement. We have an independent AppSec team whose job is to handhold you through the process of clearing those gates and assess your completion of those security controls. And then as you go through that process and start clearing those gates, you reach the point of assessment and we assess your application for risk, whether it's a cloud app or a mobile app. And once we have performed that independent assessment, then we certify the application, and then I or my team contacts our pipeline team to tell them, yes, they can alleviate the block. And what they do is they configure the pipeline to allow them to go to production at that point. And then after that, if they introduce vulnerabilities into their application that exceed those thresholds, then the gates will block and prevent them from actually deploying to production. And when I say production, it's cloud environments, right? Cloud One or other cloud environments. We've delivered to cloud environments. We've delivered to platform systems or Kubernetes platforms. But we also have paved the pathway to the Apple App Store, the Google App Store, and to a variety of ATO'd mobile device management systems that are run by the DoD. So we can deliver your app to the official Air Force App Store using, you know, the Air Force Developer Cert, or we can sign it using enterprise certificates, and we can deliver it directly bypassing the App Store. We can deliver directly to MDMs if there's, you know, particularly sensitive app requirements. Matt can go in more detail on the actual practices on the DevSecOps side.
Yeah, real quick, Matt, before you jump in there, I did like a couple of things you pointed out. Obviously, you have the robust pipeline with the diversity of tools and the ability to kind of distribute to diversified marketplaces and endpoints and so on. But you also you call out what's called CWE for folks not familiar. That's common weaknesses and enumerations. And the reason I want to highlight that is we hear a lot about, you know, secure by design systems and so on. And you can get down the rabbit hole of just chasing vulnerabilities, CVEs, for example. But if you get to the CWEs, you can actually address systemic, you know, root vulnerability issues that are pervasive and repeatable and drive down security tech debt. So I'd like to hear that. And then Matt, go ahead. I'll kick it over to you.
Yeah, and to kind of hit on like what Dave's been talking about is like we kind of view that NIAP scan, which is the policy of like that's how you get an approved application. But we have to take it a step further, right? Like the dynamic scanning capability that we have is actually going out and looking against like the mobile OWASP top 10. So if you're you know hyper concerned around man in the middle attacks or insufficient binary protections, because like when you put your app on a, you know, mobile device, you're exposing that source code to the world. So you want to make sure you have binary protections. You want to make sure you have like smart approaches for authentication and authorization. And we've partnered with, you know, Mobile Connect, and, you know, we have our own Access Connect with KeyCloak to really just help developer teams be able to have a solid ICAM capability. But then like on the DevOps side, right? Like after we do all of these great tools and put it through this pipeline, it doesn't really, you know, matter unless you can get it into the hands of the warfighter that needs that capability. And that's where like we have this amazing relationship with Boxcar, which is, you know, out at Offutt Air Force Base, that, you know, has a mobile device management capability. And they're a, you know, military organization in the Air Force that has 60,000 devices. And we automatically deploy those applications into a managed MDM, because policy states right now, if like your app is touching CUI, it can't go onto the App Store. Like you need it to be on a mobile device managed capability. So that really restricts, you know, when it comes to pushing, you know, a lot of apps just like into the App Store, they have to go into this MDM capability. And we've been able to prove that we can, you know, do live app updates, very similar to a web app, you know, over the air in like, you know, 30 minutes or less, just using our relationship with Boxcar and pushing all of that out. So I think like that is the thing that we have to really push on when it comes to how we're going to deliver with inside policy, right? Until we have the, you know, assurances and, you know, everyone's comfortable with other ways that we can protect our data that is interfacing with an application that could be potentially on a commercial app store. Until we have approved and authorized ways to do that, you're going to have to leverage a mobile device manager, and rightfully so, right? Like, there might be missions where you want to make sure that like you can take advantage of what an MDM can give you. And like, for those that don't know, like an MDM gives you a lot of really great features when it comes to like remote wipe, you know, OS update management. Like if you haven't updated from iOS 16 to 17, you're probably in a bad state already. And like the security management and asset management of like who's actually on your network and doing the multi-tenancy of like, this is the MDM for, you know, logistics organization X, but here's another MDM for the security forces organization X. And there might be different sets of policies that you have to go through. So making sure that like on the IT op side, which in our case, you know, compute and store is the device, we have to be really tightly coupled with an amazing like, you know, multi-device or mobile device manager. And, you know, that's with our relationship with Boxcar. So really pushing the needle where I would like to see, you know, security policy going is like, how can we get, you know, applications that touch CUI just out into the commercial app store, make it frictionless for the end user to be able to, you know, access, you know, a DoD approved application. Because in my mind, like Signal is an unapproved app, but it's probably dominating the significant portion of DoD chat inside across like, you know, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, right? And even though it's like an unimproved app for CUI, people are using it potentially for that because it's frictionless. And if we don't like take investments in making sure that we can provide it frictionless end user experience with applications that we trust on devices that we trust and invest in like solid BYOD approaches and all of that, then the, you know, we're not going to get off the runway when it comes to mobile. So that's the, you know, that's the landscape that we're operating in right now.
Yeah. And the mission finds a way, right? I mean, Matt's exactly right about that. You know, when people are doing ops, they're going to do what they need to do to get the mission done. Right. So we have this really great slide that, you know, one of our actually pipeline lead put together. The complexity that we deal with in this space, you know, Matt was talking about MDMs and app stores. So you can deliver an app to the app store, and you can deliver an app to the MDM. And in order to process CUI, the app has to be downloaded from the MDM, right? You can have the same app in two places, but you can only get the MDM controlled version because it has to run in that isolated sandbox. You can't just take your personal device and go download you know, Microsoft Outlook, for example, just to use a generic example. You can't go download Microsoft Outlook off of the App Store and use that to connect to, you know, the .mil Exchange service. So notwithstanding the fact that you need to have cat capability on that device, right? But you, that capability is supposed to be loaded into, for CUI, right? For non-CUI, okay, maybe, but for CUI processing, for mission capabilities, the policy is that that is supposed to be through an actual pre-approved accredited MDM. And the problem we see then is how, not only how do we develop securely, how do we ensure that we're meeting a standard, right? Because customers don't know what standard they have to meet, and then they don't have necessarily the expertise to build the tooling and the accreditation capability, right? But then how do we actually get the app to the App Store or to the MDM? And if you are a single PMO and you are trying to solve that problem yourself, you are solving the same problem as every other organization, every other PMO or innovation team, and you're all trying to independently solve that problem and pave that pathway, but you're doing it one at a time and kind of, you know, groping around to feel through the process. And what we've done at Bespin is established paved paths to those endpoints, right? To those target destinations, but we have to do it at scale. So we're not doing it for an app for a mission. We have to support a wide variety of missions, a wide variety of applications with a wide variety of tech stacks and a wide variety of data and security requirements going to a wide variety of target environments in a variety of pathways, right? Because some MDMs can pull from an app store and take an app from unmanaged to managed, right? Some will not do that, and they only want that direct API connection, right? So it gets extremely tangled when you have that. And back to the example I was using about CAC, right? So we have this innovative capability that we built out at Bespin for, it's called Mobile Connect. And Matt mentioned it earlier. This capability, right now, if you want to put a CAC on your mobile device, you have two options. You can either basically burn a CAC certificate, a derived certificate, onto your device from DISA. You can go through a process at DISA to generate a software certificate through a controlled mechanism and load it to your device. And then your device effectively has a CAC certificate attached to it. So your one device has your one CAC, right? So now if you have 50 people who need mobile access, each one needs their own device and each one must have a CAC burned into only their device. Or you can use an external CAC reader, right? So these external dongles and things like that. The problem, so you get the benefit of being able to move the device around between people. They can just swap their card out. But now you drop that device on the flight line and your F-16s are grounded, because they're going to just hoover in everything imaginable into their engine, right? So then they have to do FOD walks to clear everything up. So what we built is an authentication capability that integrates directly with GCDS. You've got solutions like Okta and YubiKey, which are great for specific missions. But when you talk about zero trust in the DoD, you want that zero trust based on an actual known identity. And the identity scheme that the DoD has is rooted in your DoD identity through GCDS, Global Content Delivery System at DISA. And that's the SSO, the single sign-on system for the DoD. And so all of these CAT cards are rooted in that identity store. And so we have built a mobile capability in partnership with the Army and taking it through, again, in partnership with the Army, taking it through full DoD CIO approval as an alternative to the CAC. We've effectively created, it's very similar to something like Google Authenticator on your phone, where it creates a cryptographic binding between the app on your phone and your CAC identity. So then you can use this app on your phone the same way that you would use Google Authenticator, but it is primary factor authentication. You do not need the CAC card once you enroll. And your two factors then are the possession of the device and a biometric scan. Right. So you are able to perform, or a pin, right? So you're able to still have two-factor capability, but it provides CAC level authentication to systems that enroll in that service. And so that's been rolling out over the last several months. and they've been getting some adoption there. And they're also baking into that the multi-user capability. So you can have multiple user profiles and you can move that device in between people and they can just switch their CAC profile, authenticate in using biometrics or PIN, and then they're back in authenticating through strong authentication to the backend service. So there's some real opportunities for innovation there as well.
That makes sense. It seems like a great opportunity around the authentication authorization piece in the mobile domain. So, you know, Matt, you threw out a metric earlier. You said something akin to, you know, about 10% of the military has about, you know, has access to CUI information on a mobile device. But we know there's several millions of military personnel with mobile devices. How can we expand that footprint, you know, securely? With security, obviously, is a key consideration of that. But how can we expand it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because like, you know, we have the next generation of warfighters, right, grew up with a mobile device in their hands, basically, you know, as they started walking. So they're not going to like tolerate antiquated processes and procedures that are kind of bottlenecking us right now to really be able to accelerate that mobile adoption when it comes to giving people a device that they can leverage. So, you know, one way that we're trying to look at that, you know, inside the DoD or inside of BESPIN is like, we need to work with the DoD enterprise to establish almost like, you know, a VM on your personal device. And then you can be able to access, you know, some, you know, sandbox environment on your, you know, own personal device that already has some preloaded applications onto it. Think calendars, think email, think simple table stakes types of applications like that. And then you've cracked the nut for, I would say, 30% of the DoD personnel that really just need like an office-like experience outside of the office on their mobile device. And then that, I believe, would really create some mobile habits across the DoD to really start, you know, questioning, okay, like, hey, now that I have like this ability to like check email or, you know, share this data on a mobile device, what if I was able to do, you know, be able to share like the squadron's maintenance schedule on a mobile device? And all of those pieces will hopefully generate additional habits around mobile and generate additional demand, which then in turn will potentially generate, you know, the concepts of operations, you know, starting to change where we don't have to deploy with, you know, server racks worth of equipment, you know, when we go out to, you know, austere location X, because we don't trust the networks and the way we like plan to mitigate risk around the not trusting the networks is just bringing your compute and store with you. If you could eventually like create that distributed network that Dave was talking about, using the power of mobile and incorporating that into concepts of operation, you then the concept of like, I need to go to a physical center to interface with data becomes like a thing of the past where like you don't do that in your day-to-day lives. You don't like typically most people don't go to a PC terminal to like check their bank statements anymore. And like people, like we have this like kind of just, oh, we can just, you know, put that progressive web app inside of a browser or something like that. Or then they can, you know, interface, you know, with data that way. But how many people like go to USAA.com on a mobile browser versus actually using the USAA app? That's the level of a, you know, customer journey and end user experience that we have to like be serious about, or, you know, mobile adoption is always going to continue to be like, you know, a generation behind. So in my opinion, like you got to start small with like simple table stakes applications, a calendar and email. Hopefully that's going to change behaviors. And because there's still going to be a need for those mobile native applications that are going to have to reside either on a MDM if it's a critical mission, or, you know, that we can trust in a way to be able to put it out on the commercial app store with the wrappering of like, well, maybe we just need like, you know, a secure way to trust the networks and, you know, have like our own VPN that people can download inside of a mobile device so they can then like, you know, ensure that when that data is getting traversed over uncontrolled networks, you know, we still trust it to get encrypted and decrypted when it hits like Nipper, and it's not going to have man in the middle attacks. It's not going to be like, you know, you know, a big vulnerability point inside of our ecosystem. So there's a long way to go there. I hope I answered that question in a succinct way.
You did. I wanted to ask kind of a parting question here to you, maybe perhaps is, you know, can you, you know, emphasize to the community as we kind of leave here, we talk a lot about authentication, authorization, pipeline tooling, you know, scaling the form factor that people are used to, kind of a parting thought here, you know, how critical is it to get these secure mobile capabilities to the airman and warfighter? We know the modern way of warfare looks much different, and people not only from a warfare perspective, but we talked about just personally are used to using these devices for day-to-day activities. And it has an implication for the workforce and their quality of life too. So, you know, how critical is this? If you had to give kind of a parting thought,
in my opinion, it's massively critical. You take a look at, you know, the CIA director publicly came out last February and said, "Hey, China is prepping for an invasion of Taiwan in 2027." And then you look on the R end of like these war games of like we get our butt kicked in them because we lose network connectivity almost, you know, within the first 24 hours. And then like you look at agile combat employment where their concepts of like, you know, within the first 72 hours, main operating bases like AOCs and big logistics centers and all of that are going to be down, either been attacked or cyber attacked or something like that. So if we continue to rely on this legacy infrastructure that is very centralized and data centers and all of that, we're going to still have those bad outcomes in the war games, and we can't have those bad outcomes in the war games in reality. So, you know, that's where mobile can come into play. It's not like the panacea that's going to solve everything, but it's that additional layer that you can provide so you can continue operations inside of the fight. Because like, I'm super proud that the Air Force is really making a conscious effort with the Great Power Competition to push this out and really, you know, think about ways to, you know, be effective in a peer-to-peer fight. And in my opinion, the best way to do that is create this decentralized, you know, distributed network that is much harder to attack, because there's not, you know, massive critical vulnerability points inside of that network. And mobile can really help that, you know, with 5G and all the things that we talked about. So, yeah, like, I think, you know, now is the time to stop neglecting mobile and build like a mobile coalition inside of, the innovation ecosystem to really say like, hey, I might not have a mobile requirement that somebody has given me, but I believe that like we should like have a conversation with our end users, follow user-centered design to, you know, drum up the demand and the need for alternative ways of going to war and supporting the support forces back home so they can be able to conduct their missions, you know, outside of just like a base building type of thing.
Yeah, and I really want to piggyback on that too, because a lot of times the comments regarding mobile adoption seem to center on, well, people today grew up with a phone in their pocket, and so that's what they're used to. So we have to change everything we do in order to accommodate that paradigm. And I totally understand that view and that approach. But none of us grew up flying fighter aircraft or sitting in tanks or infantry fighting vehicles or doing squad maneuvers, right? These are all things that are learned and are part of, you know, the operational art and science of war, right? So to some extent, the technology is going to have to follow the mission, right? And so the mission, and Matt nailed it, the mission imperative is around great power competition and that agile combat employment capability, right? Being able to maneuver quickly. You see it coming out of, you know, even just the open source feedback out of Ukraine, where, and Chris, you mentioned earlier, where a signal appears and then, you know, units are being targeted, right? These mobile devices are giant SIGINT flags, right? They're just saying, hey, come bomb me. So you not only have to work in this environment, yeah, there's going to be a contested space, right? And our networks are going to be under attack from day one or even before, because, you know, you've got preparation of the battle space, right? So, but we also have very capable defensive cyber, right? We've got offensive and defensive cyber capabilities, and defensive cyber, you know, in situations like that will be preemptive as well, right? So, but that can only go so far. So we have to assume a contested battle space, and we have to assume that you need to be able to, pop up and appear and operate and then move out or hide in the noise or whatever, right? And so it creates this imperative to embrace, again, going away from this kind of centralized to this decentralized or distributed type approach where you have these supercomputers in your pocket, right? Which are more powerful than supercomputers years ago, and create these capabilities where you can have access to the data you need on the device you need when you need it, and then you can funnel that information back to decision makers very quickly. It's not easy to solve, but you know, it's the space that we're directly operating in right now and trying to improve that as we can.
Yeah, as you pointed out, it's critical and it's not an easy problem to solve, but it's one that has to be solved when we look at future type of conflicts, workforce implications, a distributed denial of services, you know, in terms of centralized infrastructure and data centers and cloud and so on. So I think you guys really made a rallying call to the community, you know, get out here, help, weigh in, give your expertise, give your perspective. And for folks that, you know, aren't looking at the video here, that's teambespin.us, teambespin.us. So definitely give it a look. And Matt, and folks tuning in here, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. Enjoyed it.